It's time for Supply Chain Now Radio, sponsored by Apex Atlanta and TalentStream. Broadcasting live from the supply chain capital of the country, Atlanta, Georgia, Supply Chain Now Radio spotlights the best in all things supply chain. The people, the companies, the technologies, the best practices, and the critical issues of the day. Now, here are your hosts.
All right. Good morning. Scott Luton here with you live on Supply Chain Now Radio. Welcome to the show. We're glad that you've chosen to join us today on another edition of our Tech Connect series. We are broadcasting live from an innovative blockchain solutions provider who is bringing the blockchain to supply chain. We're broadcasting live from BlockNets in beautiful Alpharetta, Georgia, on a pretty frigid Georgia morning. Be sure to check us out on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Podcasts, soon to be Stitcher. We'd love for you to subscribe so you don't miss anything. To listen live, in case you're listening to a replay, to listen live, it's very easy. Go to supplychainnowradio.com, hit the big red button where we typically feature our next show, and it's all downhill and easy from there. So let's say good morning to my talented co-host this morning, Ashley Libke, Chief Visionary Officer at Vision Media Group. Good morning, Ashley.
Good morning, Scott.
Glad you are here. Good to collaborate once again. This is episode 60 for Supply Chain Now Radio, and it's been a pleasure to keep growing this Tech Connect series.
Yeah, we're getting some exciting topics. I'm really excited for today's show.
Absolutely. So who do we have on the show today?
So today we have Bob Betts. He is the founder and CEO of BlockNets, and we're going to explore the interesting world of blockchain. And we have Jeff Harvey, and he is with SAP Leonardo, and they're really leading the charge around how to use IoT and blockchain, and it's going to be an exciting conversation.
Big show. Two big technology leaders, and it's great to be here. Great to be hosted by BlockNets, which has been on quite a tear here lately. Look forward to diving more in to that with Bob Betts. So let's start the show, as we do just about every show, some of the top things known in supply chain now. And I want to lead off with a couple things, and then I want to pick your brain on a big event that you're speaking at. We're going to be in Orlando, Florida next week with Velocity 2019. I've been invited to sit down on a talent and supply chain panel. We're really excited about that. Keynotes at the summit includes Corey Graven, Executive Director, Supply Chain North America for Johnson Controls, and Amber Sally, Research Director at Gartner. You can learn more at velocity-conference.com. And big thanks to our friends over at Legility for the invite. Corinne Bursa has been a great champion of Supply Chain Now Radio and Apex Atlanta, and we're looking forward to being down in warmer Orlando next week. Next up, and Ashley, I'm really excited about this, Supply Chain Now Radio is very pleased to serve as a media partner with e-commerce operations, or the e-commerce operations summit. I need another cup of coffee. It's getting huge, big buzz around this conference. And we're pleased, again, to partner with these folks. You are going to be up there speaking,
I'll be there.
Right? Tell us about what's behind all this buzz.
Yeah, so I'll be there in Columbus, Ohio, April 9th through 11th, and super excited to return as a speaker. I've spoken at the conference before about global shopping behavior and how that influences shipping. And this year, I'm going to be sitting with my friends from ProShip. I've worked on projects a decade and a half ago with Justin Kramer, the founder of ProShip, and we're going to be exploring multi-carrier rating. We have one of their customers, REI, talking about, you know, the complexities of using different carriers, and especially with sporting goods, they've got those fishing poles and all kinds of crazy things to ship. So just shipping, you know, the weird, odd, different types of items, we're going to explore that for those merchants. They changed the show this year. They call it the e-commerce operations summit because we have to admit, everything involves some aspect of e-com, internet play. There's going to be some technology. And, you know, now this week, Instagram announced, you know, shopping direct from Instagram. That's going to throw another monkey wrench into retailing. So we're always going to be exploring the fulfillment aspect. How do you get those items shipped to the consumers? So that show's focused on really that direct-to-consumer, omni-channel operations and fulfillment solution set.
If you see our friend Donovan True with REI, he's been on a couple webinars with us. You know, REI have been great leaders in the omni-channel space, as I'm sure you're well aware of. So say hello and invite him back on for a follow-up key takeaways webinar or podcast maybe. Donovan True, one of our supply chain leaders.
And we're going to get into some neat talk that kind of sparked my brain as far as, you know, REI is very famous for recycling the coats and finding new uses for those items. So, you know, there's another blockchain application, and you track your down coat from end to end, and I'm sure they're getting into doing things, and I'm sure one of our guests knows something about that today.
Well, there's a discount code, right?
Yes, we have a discount code as part of the media sponsorship. There is actually a pop-up site, a pop-up on the site also, but you just go to the ecommerceoperationssummit.com and go put in the code OPSVMG. OPSVMG. You can always direct connect with us too. We can give you that code, but that'll give you a discount off the registration. And jump in quick before those tickets go away. And, you know, it's going to be a great show. There's some great names there, like Google, Lucky Brand is going to have a great talk. Order Dynamics has had some really exciting omnichannel global research come out this year that I'm tracking, and I'm looking forward to seeing those folks, as well as Radial. They're doing exciting things in fulfillment. And Untuck It. You know, it's cool to keep your shirt untucked, and they got a whole brand with that, and that company's gotten some venture capital, and they're going global and omnichannel too. So I'm excited to see what they got up their sleeves.
Sure. To our listeners, if you cannot find the discount code, Scott, Scott, at supplychainnowradio.com. We'll get you the link. We'll get you the codes. We're here to serve as a resource. Great conference teed up on both of those, the Velocity 2019 conference and the e-commerce operations summit in Columbus, Ohio. Ashley, so this is Tech Connect, a very popular series here at Supply Chain Now Radio. What else are you seeing in the tech space?
Yeah, so, you know, I'm super curious. I'm always doing a lot of research, reading the reports and seeing what consumers are looking for. I've been attending these retail omnichannel conferences for years, and have been going to a couple this year. And the thing that I'm seeing as a general theme, we've talked about trust being an issue. Trust comes up in almost every conversation, and that's something we can explore again in this conversation around blockchain. But how can you also just enable technology change? I think every single person I talk to is trying to either rip a system out, update a system, integrate a system. And it's just a big challenge. And the companies are also challenged with staffing, just constantly recruiting and trying to find that leading tech talent.
War for talent.
Yeah,
no doubt.
There's a war for talent. And so combining change with a war for talent, you know, we're seeing that as a guiding principle. We're also seeing some of these unicorns. There's a lot of money in venture capital that's sort of sitting around waiting to go to technology. And there's lots of little pending unicorns that are about to take off with some really innovative, disruptive technology. So I'm not going to go into all of them, but it keeps me very busy trying to, you know, keep a pulse on all of that. And it's just fascinating to see the way companies are either merging or finding ways to partner there. So that's something that we're seeing a lot of.
Yep. That noise was our hot news indicator. It was just about 2 minutes late because we were announcing you keynoting that e-commerce operations summit. So kind of working on the timing of our signals there. But no shortage of news and activity, innovation, change. In the technology space, and of course, that's such a huge part. It's revolutionizing the end-to-end supply chain management space. So it's really neat to see. You know, we were also as part of this, you know, how it's changing our the supply chain landscape. We were at the Georgia Logistics Summit last Thursday. Mm-hmm. You and I, a couple others, only about 398 of our best friends, and the inland port strategy. You know, talking e-commerce and how technology is shaping things. You know, Georgia's doubling down on that inland port strategy because one of the reasons is because e-commerce is forcing them to move the freight more conveniently, more efficiently, so we can honor those same day and those 2 day shipping commitments.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah, that's right. The landscape has changed so much that you're right. End-to-end supply chain is a totally different game. It used to be, how fast can I get these goods from the warehouse to the consumer? And definitely same-day delivery is a major facet. You see the Uberization of delivery with Roadie getting $37 million recently. And, you know, it's a new paradigm to say that I'm going to order something online and some random person in a car who happens to be driving from Marietta to Gwinnett County is going to bring my package to me. I mean, I think we're going to have to adapt not right. only as consumers and as retailers and vendors in the industry, but it pushes the system very hard because then with the Appalachian Regional Port is something that everybody should ARP. Become aware of. So go Google that and figure out what it is. Basically, it's a way to connect the Savannah port to a port that's up in northwest Georgia. Mm-hmm. Boy, is that going to stimulate the economy up there going mm-hmm. all the way into Chattanooga and Tennessee. And it's the ability to get cargo off of boats and on a train immediately and get it very, very quickly to a new region of the country that mm-hmm. probably would have taken about a week in the past, and now they can get those trailers lifted off in 9 minutes.
Absolutely. You know, the other interesting thing, I think I was reading in CSCMP's quarterly magazine, how not just Georgia, but we're going to see a lot more inland ports infrastructure across the country to meet this, not just to meet the e-commerce demand, but that's certainly a big driver.
And so what happens there, actually, just to wrap it up, is this impacts the carriers. Because now you're talking about, instead of goods that might have been coming from China or Europe and into Savannah, and in the past they were probably going to Long Beach. You know, now Savannah is actually a threat as far as getting those goods to come around a different way in some cases. And they can get that into a different area. So now you're talking about a little bit more competition between these carriers to get the LTL, get the freight. There's kind of some switch-ups. And for retailers, when you start talking about, again, multi-carrier rating management, address validation to the street level, and businesses working together to enable things like store pickups and same-day delivery, there's just a lot going on there. So that's fun to watch. I'm going to continue watching and see how this blockchain thing starts taking effect.
One last bookend on the summit. We're going to have Matt Markham, Executive Director of the Georgia Center of Innovation for Logistics, on a Key Takeaway podcast. And we featured him a month and a half ago or so, kind of as a sneak peek of what goes on at the summit. And he's going to be back in late April, early May, as we do kind of some of his key takeaways from a sold-out summit right up here in Cartersville. So looking forward to next year and the next region he'll be in. Last week also, Ashley, the Atlanta Supply Chain Awards. Wow, what an incredible event there. We enjoyed that. We've got a lot of fantastic content from that event. But big winners from Haverty's Furniture, who won for Supply Chain Innovation of the Year. Huddle House, Inc., won for Warehousing and Fulfillment Excellence. Georgia Quick Start, long time. You talk about economic development, secret weapon here in the state of Georgia. They won for Workforce Partner of the Year. On that note, the Georgia Manufacturing Appreciation Week banquet is going to be April 18th, which is kind of a really big annual deal that Quick Start drives, where they're celebrating the small, medium, and large manufacturer of the year. And planning for 2020 has begun. So we're on the clock to announce the details for next year. So we'll see. But it was great to see you, great to plan throughout, and great to put a spotlight on all these companies that are in the trenches fighting these supply chain battles day in and day out.
Yeah, we can learn a lot from them. It's fun to do it through an awards ceremony and then get to meet some of those great people. Our industry is awesome.
Absolutely. And the UPS team, great to see them take the award for forwarding, which is a really challenging and evolving industry. And great to have them come out. It had an army of UPSers come out and celebrate that win. So that was really neat to have them be a part.
Yes, it was. I personally know some of those people that have been working on forwarding projects for at least a decade, and to see them be recognized was fabulous because that is a difficult industry and something that changes, again, frequently.
Yep. So switching gears now from the week that was to the week that is, or we've got two great speakers lined up here. So, Ashley, we're going to start with Bob today. Is that right?
We've got Bob Betts. He's the founder of BlockNets, and I've been out here before to meet Bob and some of his team. We videotaped and did a short video. You can check that out on our Facebook and for Supply Chain Now Radio. So they've got an incredible demo set up here. I mean, I've been in technology for 20 years. I've never seen a demo set up. So welcome, Bob, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for coming, and I'm glad to host you.
Yeah, I guess, or thank you for hosting us, exactly. So, Bob, when we were here before, we got to see this, you know, incredible display of the technology that you have in play. But, you know, let's back up. Let's talk a little bit about your background and, you know, how did you come into blockchain and why are you here in Alpharetta, Georgia?
The blockchain evolution is a long time coming. For 20 years, I've been trying to find a vehicle where you could reach down into these long supply chains and actually integrate these small companies economically. If you do a lot of supply chain, you do a lot of networking, you know, basically the only way to do that in the past has been through fairly complex EDI. It takes a long time. It's very expensive to maintain. And the smaller companies really struggle with it. So it's been very, very limited. And then when you look at the planning software and you look at the supply chain operations, a lot of that to date has been focused inside the four walls of the enterprise. Now, it's great software. You need it inside the four walls. Believe me, you got to have it. But nowadays, I think of it more as the ante into the table. It's not going, it'll help you, but it's not going to differentiate you from your competition anymore. Now you've got to be able to, especially the companies with these long supply chains, you've got to reach down and know what every part's doing, where every part's from, and what it means to you. That's why the blockchain network's important. Now I can do it economically. We can track with certainty exactly what's happening, and we have an immutable record all the way from end to end. Really exciting stuff.
Now, if EDI was a little complicated, and I've seen EDI in process, it usually takes a certain type of operator who has a little bit of training in how to process not just the data, but the interface where you're going to see the data. How did you find people to work with you on blockchain? It's so new. Where do you find people?
That has been the challenge. You talk about the skill war that's going on and the talent war that you're in. I found the first gentleman at a hackathon. I was up there talking about blockchain and what we're doing and what we're thinking about doing in the aerospace world. And everybody's aptly paying attention and studying, worrying about what I'm saying. And here's this guy sitting in the corner, type, banging away on the computer. And I watched him for about 10 minutes. And the only thing I could think of is, well, he's either doing something important or he's checking his email. But I must be pretty boring. But after I got done talking, I went over and sat down next to him, asked him what he was doing. He was writing an Ethereum contribution and posting it to the GitHub. So I talked to him for about 10 more minutes, figured out that's my first guy. And
what is an Ethereum to a GitHub?
Ethereum. Thank you. I was just nodding my head like
that's okay. Ethereum is one of the blockchain technologies. It's a set of protocols. And a GitHub is actually where the public contributes their software to the overall cause. And John, the gentleman I'm talking about, he had contributions to the Hyperledger. He had contributions to Ethereum. He had his own way to create smart contracts long before. So I looked at this guy, and I'm going, he's my kind of guy.
Hard he's like core. Your blockchain influencer.
Oh, yeah. But John could take not just the concept. He could take it from concept all the way and get the code done. Now, I actually talked to him for a few minutes over in Huntsville and then came back to Alpharetta and thought about it a little bit more. And I asked him if we could meet the next week and hired him, literally, in another hackathon. So John and I have been on this road for just a little bit over a year. And in that time, we have found the other people we needed, both the front-end people, because now you have to have new, easy-to-use front-ends if you're going to have applications that these small companies can use. And you have to have a very, very good back-end person. Because in our case, we're tied to the SAP Leonardo blockchain platform, which is Hyperledger. But we also use Amazon's, because Amazon has a secure GovCloud. And we live in aerospace and defense, so you've got to have that. And then IBM. And IBM asked us to join theirs. and we've adapted our back end to that as well. So it is a continual journey.
Can we trust the system?
That's the best part of this, in my mind. Trust, I believe, what's the old phrase, trust but verify?
Right.
That's the best part of blockchain. Every piece of it is validated and verified. And the way we've implemented our particular system, it's not just validating each block along the way, because that's pretty pedestrian. We validate the partner before they even start. So you know whoever's on your network is validated. They're supposed to be there. You know exactly their role and their responsibility in the entire system. And all of that is done through basically a little expert system interviewer that we built. It builds them into the network, and it takes very, very little mechanical work to then to bring up the blockchain and start the nodes.
Two-step authentication?
At minimum. Believe me. When you start looking at some of the intellectual property that goes on a blockchain, things like, in fact, we were talking about this with a customer just a couple of days ago, 3D printers. When you start storing 3D printing files, and then they want to be able to print a part anywhere in the world, you've got to guarantee that that printer file cannot be corrupted in any way. So you have to have this seamless connection between the blockchain and the printer. Well, most of the time, there's a PC sitting there, right? And that's what drives those printers. Well, we're working with Intel to take that PC out of there and build basically an intelligent blockchain adapter that will be work on our system and actually pull the file right out of the blockchain right into the printer. No hands, no PC, no nothing. Mm. So now you have a secure connection again, just as an example.
And you don't have that 486. 30-year-old printer that's
No. Not even a Pentium. No, Intel is providing us some of their most advanced technology. It's really quite exciting. Mm. And all the software development kits we need to layer our code on top to make that an absolutely seamless exercise. Using, by the way, all four of the authentication keys that are available to us within the blockchain technology.
That's fabulous. I'm curious, is there any biometric skinning incorporated into some of this now?
Two of the companies that we work with have asked us to give a biometric interface. Mm-hmm. In other words, instead of a logon ID and password, they want to be able to use your thumbprint or whatever. Also, they would like the biometrics as a secondary authentication key for the data release. We can do that. We do not have that in our software right now, but we have that we want to do that as part of our third-party release mechanism.
Yeah. As prevalent as facial recognition, retina scanning, and thumbprint is that it's pretty standard fare, so it seems ripe for the picking for certain type of products.
The place where we've actually been asked to do this, especially the facial, which actually scared me a little bit, was in medical devices. Mm-hmm. Because the nurses want to be able to pull the mask down and get access to specialized medical devices. Things like artificial knees and how you align the artificial knees and hips and things. There's a lot of equipment that goes into that. All of it specialized. So they want to be, because they don't want to touch anything, they just want to pull their mask down, log on, and have it be distributed to them. Another whole set of use cases. But right now we're focused on what we're focused on, which is really very heavily on the aerospace and defense, preventing the counterfeiting, getting the counterfeit parts out of the system, preventing them from entering in the first place, and securing the intellectual property that the companies have that participate in these chains.
So why do you think that blockchain has been misunderstood lately as far as, you know, where the initial conversations had come around Bitcoin and, you know, what's the new paradigm as far as, is there a mental shift where people are starting to understand that this is, I mean, I saw it in action. I thought, wow, this is a really neat way of showing data that's coming in real time, almost in a feed, which many other technologies do. It's not so Martian, and it is easier for the user to get access to data. It seems like it would be easy to query sort of by like getting into the back end of a scheme or a database. Why has it been getting such a weird rap, and why are people so confused about everything?
You know, it reminds me a lot of the Open Systems Networks challenges way back in the late 80s, early 90s. You know, at that time, IBM controlled darn near every data communication system in the planet through something called SNA. Well, along comes this stuff called TCP/IP, and all of a sudden, companies started trialing it, and they were worried about security and layers and all the same things you hear about the blockchain. It is part of what I think of as the normal evolution of new technology. Mm-hmm. The only difference in the blockchain is it is radically new. It's not an evolution. This is a step, because there is no relational database. So you're abandoning almost this concept of relational databases that's been around since the 80s. Now your code has to work differently. Your software has to work differently to people. But you got to hide all of that from the users so that it looks very simple to use, and you can adapt the networks and get everything online without anybody really having to deal with it. That's the trick. And unfortunately, the Bitcoin stuff gets all the press.
Right.
So every time we're in front of someone, they ask about the Bitcoin, you know, how does it work? What does it mean? And it really, you know, we explain to them it's just an implementation of the blockchain technology. In fact, we try to stay away from the term blockchain and use distributed ledger,
mm-hmm.
because that really helps divorce it from the Bitcoin.
Go ahead.
I was just going to add, Bob said blockchain wasn't new, and it reminds me of this neat, real neat article in this supply chain magazine, CSCMP, where the approach was, the idea came up in 1991 as a way to time stamp documents, but it all of a sudden became the application and approach became more relevant. And this article goes on, which is a really neat read, goes on to talk about UPC and all of the technologies that are more relevant today, but they were invented decades ago. But all of a sudden, the application and new ways of leveraging that technology all of a sudden becomes more relevant. So it challenges readers to, don't disregard any of those technology breakthroughs in the past couple of decades, because you never know what opportunity may arise. All of a sudden, there's a new application for it.
Well, this is one of the breakthroughs that the distributed ledger will enable. You know, everything, if you think about it, has gone from mainframe to client-server. Client-server wasn't a big evolution. Now you're looking at peer-to-peer. And when you go to peer-to-peer, you've got to secure the network, but you've also got to make sure that the peers can cooperate and work together. That's the next set of applications. And that those peers can work with the existing technology, because you can't just jump off the edge of the cliff here. You know, in big enterprises and big systems, they have a long heritage with the enterprise resource planning systems like SAP. They've got thousands and thousands of people invested in them, and you can't get rid of that data. They've got decades of data in there. The ERP's got to be part of it, but the ERP can't always drive it. The ERP is a peer. And by participating as a peer, you now have all that data and all those great applications available. Now you're supercharging them almost with this all-new set of data that's coming in from across the network. That's what gets me excited.
Yeah, so between a distributed ledger and supercomputing power that we have, we can do things faster, lower cost, quicker implementations. How can people learn about distributed ledgers and technology like blockchain? Where do you suggest they start to start maybe seeing some of this?
The first place to go is always, where do you go? You go to Google, right? Everybody goes to Google. There are some really very, very nice videos out there now that explain how the Hyperledger works, for example, or the blockchain, how they'll kind of demystifies all the math and the hash codes and things like that. It makes it relatively simple. I like those a lot. Plus, companies like SAP and IBM and Amazon have done a great work on basically making it so you can understand how to originate and how to source all of those, how to source a blockchain and get the basic information.
Exciting. And we understand that you're maybe writing a book. You have maybe some patents, don't you?
BlockNets has 5 existing patents. We have applied for probably another dozen or so. In fact, we the only constraint we have are people. Writing patents and things like that take away the time from writing software and serving customers. And we're still a small, moving fast, but a small company. So we've got to manage our resources. And I'd rather write new software and get new customers than necessarily worry about a patent right now. So, yeah, we're very, very focused on that. As far as the book, there's a book out there now that really speaks to this technology. And I actually wrote it when I was at SAP. It's called Adapt or Die, and it talks about how these small companies can participate in the larger supply chains and how they can adapt and how the big companies have to adapt as well.
Because adapt or die is a great motto.
Well, that's what happens, isn't it?
Yeah, that's very true. Well, thank you for sharing all of this. We're going to continue to watch BlockNets. I know you've got some really exciting customers who shall not be named today, but some really, really amazing projects. And
this episode of Supply Chain Now Radio is brought to you by APEX Atlanta, an association for supply chain management organization. APEX Atlanta provides supply chain thought leadership, networking, and certification opportunities for supply chain professionals and companies in the Southeast. Consider getting involved with APEX Atlanta as a volunteer or general guest. Student memberships are free and the networking opportunities are numerous. Supply chain certification workshops can be delivered at your offices and are also offered through a partnership with Georgia Tech Supply Chain and Logistics Institute. In 2019, CSCP and CLTD workshops are offered in a 2.5-day bootcamp format in June and October. Whether you're interested in better understanding inventory management and planning fundamentals, end-to-end supply chain management concepts, or logistics, transportation, and distribution, APEX Atlanta has something for you. For more information on the workshops, the certifications, or area networking opportunities, check out apexatlanta.org or send a note to info@apexatlanta.org.
I'm excited also to hear from our other guest, Jeff, here, who's representing SAP and talking about some of the neat company applications that they've had over there. So let's switch it up and roll on over to our next guest. Good morning, Jeff. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning.
Good
Great
morning.
To be here with you.
Glad to have you
Bob,
here.
Bob, thanks for hosting.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for coming, Jeff.
Absolutely.
So next guest on Supply Chain Radio is Jeff Harvey, Chief Operating Officer of SAP Leonardo. Great to have you, Jeff. We really enjoyed the warm-up conversation, a really neat video that really illustrates some of the things you're going to talk about. But we'll save that for maybe later in the segment. But so tell us about your priorities this week. What do you jump out of bed looking to help companies do?
I think, as we've been talking here so far with Bob and your questions around this, right, these are new topics. And with that, there's certainly uncertainty, right? People are trying to figure that out. But with it, for what excites me and gets me up fired up to go and engage with customers on it is it represents a new value opportunity for those accounts, for those customers that can lean in, they can figure it out and determine how can I apply this new technology, even though some of them may be old, capabilities that were defined, not yet fully understood at the time.
Right, sure.
But now they're coming back and we say, okay, I can now see how I can use that. And I can use it, as I showed you that video earlier, one of our customers, Bumblebee Tuna and Bumblebee Foods, to differentiate themselves in the market, to be able to provide transparency and visibility and integrity of their products to the customer at the end of the day with a complete and open supply chain. Mm.
So tell us, just to back up, SAP, the product the group you have is Leonardo, and tell us about SAP Hyperledger, and then we'll talk more about the fish.
Yeah, I've in my 18th year with SAP, and I've had the good fortune of working in a lot of different parts of our business, and I now serve as COO of a group that we call Intelligent Enterprise Solutions and Industries. And the underlying intelligence in that model is Leonardo, and Leonardo is our portfolio that includes IoT, blockchain, machine learning, our analytics cloud offering, our data, big data offering with HANA, and all delivered through the SAP Cloud Platform. So there's a variety of technologies that are underpinning that, not just the Hyperledger capabilities in our blockchain solution, but that actually helps us bring these new technologies, these new capabilities to life for our customers and connect into their disparate, oftentimes disparate landscape of different technologies as well, because they may be running SAP, they may not, they may be running it in all or parts of their business. And so we've got to be open, flexible, agile in that way to be able to use open APIs to plug in easily and to be able to bring that transparency and that capability to life. As Bob mentioned, even for companies that are small, and many of their suppliers may not even have an ERP, right? They're running off an Excel spreadsheet or some other office application, but they may be a big contributor to the blockchain with the information that they're putting in. And so we've got to make it very clean and easy and frictionless for them as well.
Because as consumers, I think we do want to know more about the products that we buy, because the data is becoming available. So like you said, as a company, it becomes a differentiating factor how much detail that you can give about your product. And people have this ethical sustainability sort of a warrant that, you know, so I think the tuna fish is a good example. People want to know where the fish was caught. The fisherman becomes, you know, this collector of data kind of almost unwittingly. Tell us a little bit about what we saw in the video and that process of how that important data gets used. What's the problem challenge that Bumblebee is trying to solve for?
Yeah, I think in their case, they wanted to, and this is something they've done for a number of years, it's on their products today to be able to go out and trace my catch is a capability they had. And it's a manual process. You'd go and run that down. Now they want to actually really open that up so that you can, if you're a retailer or you're a shopper in a grocery store and you're considering buying some tuna steaks for dinner this weekend, and I want to be able to go scan a QR code and I want to see, where was that fish caught? How was it caught? Was it ethically sourced? How was it processed? And they want to be able to open that up to provide you that differentiation and that visibility differentiation for them of, in the market, right, so that you can see that. And at some point, ask, hey, is this Bumblebee tuna, right, because that's the product I have trust and confidence in. So it creates a whole new opportunity for companies, and it's applicable across. We go to market in 25 industries. There are use cases in all 25 industries. It's not, you know, we laugh. Bitcoin is usually the first question you get. It's certainly an interesting topic, and maybe there is a frictionless settlement that we can use to apply this to from a financial standpoint. But it's not the bigger value statement and opportunity for many of our customers today.
Do you think it more is related to their brand overall? Because it seems to me that such a prevalent part of how you make something, where it comes from, is what brand is, what your company stands for.
Absolutely, right? You stand for, in that case, freshness. You stand for being able to give the visibility of where it was caught, how it was processed. And if you're willing to share that, it says something about the controls that you have in place over your process and your company, because it's open kimono at that point, right? It's full visibility end to end. And if you're the fisherman in that case, I can also see the end consumer that bought the product. So it gives me great honor and pride and integrity in what I'm doing to catch this tuna and be able to actually then share it with the world and feed the world in doing so. So it actually, usually the lot track and trace capability we've always done with that full referential integrity of date and timestamp on everything we do in the audit trail, that's always been there. But as Bob said, it's usually within the four walls of your business. Mm-hmm. And it's usually looking backwards, not so much forward, from finished good all the way back to the source. I can flip it on its head now with this blockchain application like a Bumblebee. And if I'm the fisherman and I want to see where did my product go, right, I can trace it all the way through the chain the other way, through the blockchain. So it opens up incredible new opportunities, new use cases, and at the end of the day, incremental value for our customers.
That's great. I was at the Atlanta Jewelry Show last month speaking about different e-commerce and whatnot, and one big topic of conversation was the source of the diamonds. A lot of semi-precious stones and the designs they're doing are supposed to be exclusive and unique, and they're using these all different types of metallurgy and 3D printing and processes, and it's neat to think about the application that they could have there. I didn't see any blockchain at the jewelry show yet, but I think it's coming. I think that is something people want to know. If they have a one-of-a-kind ring, where all the stones were, and you know, it's almost part of the fanciness of it and the value.
I was a CIO in the jewelry industry way back when, and the GIA certification of that stone is something that people pay a premium for, right? They want to know that the stone is as it's represented.
Right, color, fact, clarity, and all those things.
Exactly. And so that's all part of it, right? But that was document-based. Like you said, this was time, date, stamp, validation of a document. But the document can be manipulated. Mm. And this is actually taking it back to a full track and trace. And what if you lose the document? Well, now it's in an electronic record. It's digitized. Mm. It can't be compromised, and it truly lives on with the asset, whatever that asset may be.
So we have a new friend in the diamond business with Jeff Harvey, right? If I can go back a little bit and shift gears, going back to the Bumblebee Food story and that video, which is available on YouTube, can you talk a little bit about the project to get a company to the point where you can, it's that visible and it's, all that data is at your fingertips? How does a company like that stand up that level of visibility? Can you shed a little light on that?
I think a lot. We've got a number of other customers. Another one is Nature Ripe Foods, and they're actually same use case. And you can also find this on YouTube and other sources, but with blueberries and avocados, so that you can see that when you go in and buy a product that and you says it's organic. Right, I want to know that it's truly organic. I want to know how you grew this and processed it. Mm-hmm. How long did it take to get through customs? How long has it been sitting on the boat? Is it really fresh? How fresh is it? Right, so that I can see all of this. Now, as Bob mentioned, the data's in the systems, most of the systems today. It's a matter of exposing that, and it's being able to share that with others. So it's opening it up. It's taking that and thinking about how do I want to actually make it available and linking it together maybe with other systems. In their case, that video shows them with some of the growing and the fertilization process that they're also able to track how that blueberry was grown and how it was fertilized, how it was, what the water level was, and then look at temperature. It actually helps them from a planning perspective as well so that they can get a better handle on and continue to improve their product at the end of the day. So it varies by customer and by project, right? But it's a lot of the data exists, and it's a matter of figuring out how do we link that together to be able to expose that that full record at the end of the day.
Now you've got a bunch of successful use cases across industries. I'm sure many companies are clamoring to figure out the internal change that they need to make, usually starting with scoping some project and putting it together. But it seems like this technology is fast to implementation. Once they figure out what question or problem they're trying to solve is really, I guess, the issue at hand is what are you really trying to accomplish?
Exactly.
And then from there is where maybe the jump gains come in with blockchain.
We usually start with a design thinking process, right? A one-day workshop, and we get into an environment that helps customers iterate on and identify, like you said, Asha, a problem worth solving, right? What is that? We build a quick prototype. We do that inside of 2 to 3 days to say, all right, this is what we defined. This is what it would look like. Does this capture what we're after, right? And then take that into a further evolution that we actually deliver something that we can go and test out, but in a very lean and agile way. Mm-hmm. And there's use cases everywhere. Think about pharmaceuticals and counterfeit drugs. You mentioned counterfeit parts in A&D, right? This is life and death. And I want to know that the drug is what it was and what it's represented to be.
This isn't getting your Zappos shoes, you know, on 2 days versus 3 days or same day. This is taking the wrong medication that could have very serious side effects.
Absolutely. Right. And so it's a major consequence. And you see cases everywhere that in every industry that it's just a matter of putting them in motion.
We're forcing authenticity and trust into our systems, which I personally like, because sometimes when you let people just sort of run amok and do what they want to do, you see forgery, you see fraud, paperwork, cooking the books. For us older folks who know what that's all about, you know, who watch things in the 90s, and we've seen some of our financial systems fall apart. I think this, you know, could be the answer to many prayers. But, you know, I think Bob over here and Jeff are the kind of saving the world.
Yes, I agree. So on that note, you know, you can't have any, I think it's federal law, you can't have any supply chain discussion without mentioning blockchain. I think that's federal law now. But to the naysayers that still believe, and we all have them, that blockchain is just a fad, speak to that. Speak to why is this as revolutionary as I think all of us sitting here at this table believe it is.
Bob, maybe go ahead.
All right, I'll take a whack at that one first. I think, again, I'll pull back to what I saw in all the other revolutions of and pieces of new technology.
Sure.
Everybody says, well, it's not going to really go. It won't go. It won't go. And I saw it with the open systems, the client server stuff. It took decades for this, some of these to hit. Blockchain is a little different. First, with the naysayers, what we do, just like Jeff was talking about, yeah, you could say no, 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 or maybe I can do nothing for a while. But what's happening is there's so many proof points that are coming to bear. You see, you hear the new proofs of concept that are coming along. And what you see are the new value propositions Jeff's talking about. Mm. Now, it's not a technology question. It's a question of competitive value of your company. Mm. Now your competitor's doing this. They're making better, your stock value goes up, their costs go down. Okay, now I got to go dance.
Keeping up with the Johnsons and supply chain.
It's it is funny how much that really is becoming part of this discussion. Mm. Because some of the value propositions are radical.
Yeah.
Because of this amount of data and how fast you can pull, you know, something we've not even talked about yet, how fast you can begin to apply the higher level analytics. Because now you've got all this very, very high quality data available that your competitor doesn't have. All of a sudden, you're making better decisions. Your supply chain's operating much more smoothly. Your product quality's going up. And it's very visible now to your customers.
Yeah, the S&OP people are really kind of wrap their heads around how to use this.
Mm. Oh, for sure. This is going to radically change S&OP.
Yeah. Mm. And then they're going to have a fiduciary responsibility to check it out.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
I think it'll become part of the experience, right? It's part of the experience that the consumer will want. They're going to want to go look at as I'm considering what I'm making or eating today, or a product I'm buying, a drug, whatever it is. I want to scan it, right? And I'm going to have trust and confidence in those brands that can give me those capabilities. And those that can't, I'm going to question, right? And maybe it's going to affect my decision-making at that point. And I think that drives it more than anything else, because as this becomes part of everyday life, it is something that people are going to come to both rely on and expect. Mm. And that's what we're helping our customers get ahead of and take advantage of those opportunities so that they can use it now, even in early days, as a differentiator.
Well, you know, I hate to keep going back to a YouTube video, but that really, being a visual, tangible person, I like to touch and feel. I could see how, whether it is a company that wants that, or if it's a consumer that wants that, that makes us feel better about what we give our kids to eat and what we put in our bodies and stuff, I would argue nothing is more relevant than transparency and that level of detail and having that data at your fingertips so that you can be flexible and nimble and put something in a headlock when you need to, you know, to solve a problem or to provide details or you name it. I mean, I think everybody across that end-to-end fish supply chain benefits from that type of data transparency.
Yeah. Well, consumers have been proven to be able to absorb tremendous amounts of data. We can process 1,000 images a second.
My wife would argue my ability to do that. But, that's
but some of us, okay. I mean, you know, some of us can process lots of data and have that curiosity to know and infusing a brand with data behind the scenes where you have insight to it. I think you're right. Transparency, not just where it was made, how it was made, that it was not illegal slaves or something like that. You know, we want to know.
Sure.
It creates an emotional bond.
Yeah. Especially when you can.
That's right.
It's one thing if it's like 1985 and that what we all want is not able to be had.
Yeah.
But to Bob's point, when other companies are doing it and it's very visible and it's there for the taking if you want to be a party, that really, you know, there's a lot of demand there.
Well, from a you know, one of the things that we've always talked about in the supply chain world is having that consumer be part of your supply chain. Okay, and now what's happening is the consumer's driving the supply chains, but now they're also part of the information chain that goes with it. Mm. We all carry these little supercomputers around with us now.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
They're now all available, which, by the way, is part of the change that occurred over the last decade.
Mm.
Now you have that portal constantly available for information. And you want it. You want more and more information about everything you do in your life.
Yeah, if you're going to put my whiskey in a barrel for 35 years, I want to know what kind of barrel it was.
It better That's be true. A really good really? Barrel.
Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't right. plastic. It That's didn't right. absorb any chemical
it
properties.
It had wine in it for right. the century before. Mm.
That's right.
Right?
Well, absolutely.
She's got that process
Hey,
now.
It is Friday. So if I can change gears as we look into wrap up this segment here, you know, IoT, obviously, no, this is not new on for anyone here. I was reading a different study published by IFS, and they had surveyed about 200 organizations really focused in on IoT. And while they found that usage was up, which we all was pretty intuitive, they found that only 16% of these organizations, I think it was mainly manufacturers, had tied in their full IoT data stream, 16%, directly to their ERP. So, of course, you know, really leveraging all of that. Just want to throw that out there for commentary. What do you think we're going to see those companies? Is it a problem of folks not having their ERP configured in an optimized fashion, and so they're hesitant to dump all this data into it? Is it a integration issue? Is there other hesitancies out there? What can y'all comment on that for me, if you would?
Yeah, I think maybe a couple comments.
Sure, Jeff.
It's again helping us enable our customers to change business processes by using this stream of data. Mm-hmm. But if you can't capture and cleanse and start to normalize the data, all it is more noise faster, right? It's a bigger headache.
Sure.
But it enables us, if we can capture it, and we can, and we're doing this, we can change processes from preventative maintenance to predictive maintenance. Right, from quality management testing after the fact to predictive quality. And we've got new capabilities and new offerings out that help our customers do that. So if I can actually change the model from PM, preventive maintenance, to predictive maintenance,
absolutely,
it's a game changer. Right?
It's a lifesaver.
How do I deploy my people? What inventory do I need to keep that machine up and operable? And I'm able to take the data that's streaming off these IoT sensors, whether it be heat, vibration, emissions, just product flow rates, whatever the case may be, depending upon the use case, and put that into a model that we can actually start to make better informed decisions and ultimately automate those so that I can use machine learning and I can use predictive analysis that I can actually tell you when something's about to happen based upon the not just the mean time between failure and the statistical analysis of years past, but actually looking at the stream and what's actually happening, right? Which is, again, another game changer.
Because so, tech and data used to put these little speed bumps in front of us. It was like, okay, we just got a data dump. We got to do a report. And you had to stop.
Operation, how long did it take you to cleanse and find the needle in the haystack?
And right. Now you're talking about more of a superhighway. You're
it's
talking
real
about
time.
Enablement for right. this predictive analytics and, again, the S&OP.
Audubon.
That's great planning.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, going in light of the Boeing tragedy, when I was in the Air Force, I was assigned to a data integrity group. This is back in the late 90s, early 2000s. So back in the air where big data was still a cliche and folks were throwing it out there.
It was like a terror.
Yeah. So what we were doing is we were downloading massive troves of maintenance systems data to look for trends within the components, within malfunctions, you know, to your point, Jeff, to try to get out ahead so that we can, you know, pull these planes in and fix these systems proactively rather than pilots have to deal with a failure mid-flight, mid-mission. And when you think of it like that, and we think of Boeing, who I think 180 folks lost their lives, I think, in that tragedy, and how they're now trying to – they've grounded all those fleets. Now they're trying to rush to add the a second indicator. I can't remember what they call it. Heard on the news on the way over here. But trying to proactively prevent that from happening. I mean, this isn't about, you know, what color car you want. This is about protecting those folks that are at risk, whether they're – in uniform, or whether they're, you know, traveling the airways, or whether they're, for that matter, they're only dealing with Atlanta traffic, and you have all those other components that have to work, steering wheels, all these other, you know, things. So this notion can be written off by some, but this is revolutionizing the health and welfare and safety of the consumers, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Powerful.
The machines are able to give you that information.
Right.
Right. You can tap into it. The question is, can you use it? And that's what we're helping companies do, to actually figure out how to use it and how to do so proactively and leverage the intelligence that it's given you.
Well, we could take – I wish we had – we'd bring in lunch, take the next 3 hours to dive deeper into this. Really, this has been – this is fascinating. How can we learn more? And let's start with Bob and with BlockNets, our host today. How can we learn more about you and the organization? Where do we want to send our listeners to?
Well, the first thing is obviously you can go to our website. We've got a fairly good setup for learning about use cases, how the use cases apply across multiple industries. I would also encourage you to watch LinkedIn, especially here in Atlanta, because we'll be periodically holding open houses, just like we did about second week of December.
Love it.
And the purpose of which is to actually see it all work.
That fabulous demo that I got?
Yes,
oh,
that's exactly it.
I encourage everybody, check that out. And your web address for the listeners is BlockNets, BlockNets.com.
Thank you.
And you can check out Adapt or Die, Transforming Your Supply Chain into an Adaptive Business Network, which is the book Bob referenced earlier, co-written by Klaus Heinrich and Bob Betts. And guess what? It's popular because Amazon only has one left in stock. So it must be a bestseller. That's
time
really
for
neat.
A reprint.
That's
okay.
Right. I don't know about that.
And then, Jeff, tell us more. How can we find out more about SAP Leonardo?
The best place is just go to our global website, sap.com. But there's a ton of other content in YouTube where just search Leonardo, blockchain, IoT, machine learning, any of those topics.
And Bumblebee.
And you'll get a bunch of customer use cases out there as well, which is what, like you said, that's what makes it real, right? I want to see it in use. I don't want to just talk the technology. I want to understand what they're doing, what benefit they're getting from it. Customers are engaging us for outcomes, right? They're not just looking to buy software. They want an outcome, and that's what they're trying to do to solve a problem. And that's where we're helping them connect the dots to actually get that done and do it very, very quickly.
I love it. I really enjoyed it. Enjoyed the conversation. And again, we'll have to have y'all back. And we'll have
love to
check in on blockchain analytics and all the neat things happening right here in Alpharetta, which is a lot of technology stuff going on up in this neck of the woods here in the outskirts of the supply chain city. Before we move into some of the news and notes to finish the segment on, Ashley, what is this? What are you going to take with this information today? What's the first thing you're going to do? I mean, you can probably incorporate a lot of this into your speakership at e-commerce Operation Summit.
We'll definitely be going to be looking for blockchain at the summit. I don't know if it's explored there, but that'd be a great place for SAP to be and go check it out if you're not there this year. I'm continuing to do research. I'm writing a white paper right now, working with clients on a lot of supply chain marketing and logistics type projects. A lot of folks are really trying to come up with better content to describe, again, what are we doing for our customers? So I'm doing some storytelling. I've launched my new website. You can visit that at visionmedia.agency. And I've got some examples of some fun work that we have there. So,
and customers are the North Star for sure. As we kind of dive into some event announcements to wrap up today's episode 60 of the Supply Chain Now Radio, and specifically the Tech Connect episode, Malcolm and the research team, which keeps us on our toes, told me that I should reference David Maloney, the editorial director at CSCMP's Supply Chain Quarterly Magazine. It's his article I referenced about the blockchain technology. So thank you for that, Malcolm. I'll get you later. Upcoming APEX classes at Georgia Tech Supply Chain Logistics Institute. We have the CSCP and CLTD boot camps that kick off again on June 24th. You can send us a note if you want more information on that. It's open to the public. In May, speaking of events, we have the Association for Manufacturing Excellence, which is holding its Atlanta 2019 Lean Summit here in Atlanta. Great speakers, best practice sharing, networking, all focused on the world of manufacturing. Program includes a dozen or more plant tours, including Caterpillar, Ingersoll Rand, ZF, Fiber Visions, and many more. We are pleased to serve as a media partner. We'll be broadcasting live the evening of day one. And you can learn more about the event at ame.org. Great, great association there. Or you can send us a note for more details. We've already covered the e-commerce operations summit. That's going gangbusters. I wonder how many folks are expecting up in Columbus.
I think it's about 600. It's definitely going to be one of the largest crews.
Wow.
some great, just awesome speakers. It's going to be fun to focus in on that topic.
And they've been around for probably, what, 25 years or so?
Yeah, running that show evolved from another show that they had used to do, but Multichannel Merchant, they do a great job, too, just putting out good content. And it's going to be, it's always good to get in a room with all those smart people. Plus, they're focused on women in operations. Mm. We'd like to see what some of the new tribe are doing.
We need more of that. Yeah. We definitely need more of that. Switching gears, we're also proud media partners of EFT's 3PL and Supply Chain Summit coming to Atlanta June 10th through the 12th. Home run lineup of speakers from UPS, Land O'Lakes, Uber Freight, Cisco, DHL Supply Chain, many more. They probably have 50 speakers. Huge conference. You can check out EFT.com for more information. We're broadcasting live from the event with a potential sponsor. More to come on that. But you can send us a note, scott@supplychainnowradio.com. We'll get you more information. But great summit coming up there in June. Big thanks to our guests today, Bob Betts with BlockNets, Jeff Harvey with SAP Leonardo. Fascinating conversation, especially as a non-technologist, as we continue to wrap our head around these technologies that are revolutionizing our supply chains, whether we like it or not. And consumers like it. It's proven, right? Demand's off the chart. So really neat to see. Check out those YouTube videos. You can search that. In fact, we'll... you know what we'll do? We'll include that in the show notes. We'll get the links from you directly, Jeff, and we'll include that on our show notes page. Be sure to check out all of our upcoming events, replays of our interviews, other resources at supplychainnowradio.com. You can find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Podcasts, soon to be Stitcher. I got to announce that correctly.
Don't forget Instagram and YouTube.
All that good stuff. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss anything. On behalf of Ashley Liebke and the entire Supply Chain Now Radio team, this is Scott Luton wishing you a wonderful weekend, and we'll see you next time on Supply Chain Now Radio.
Bye, y'all.
Thanks for listening to Supply Chain Now Radio. To listen to more episodes, check us out on YouTube, Facebook, iTunes, SoundCloud, or supplychainnowradio.com. And if you're interested in advancing your career, team-building exercises, or simply satisfying your intellectual curiosity, check out an APIC certification workshop at apicsatlanta.org. Until then, I look forward to seeing you at an event. Thanks for learning.